Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
How are we doing, chaps?
All good, you?
Yeah, it's a bit snug-like, but yeah, I'm all right.
Are we going to disclose where we are and what we're doing?
So we're, 45 minutes from the Sell It Live show with Mark Crossley, and we're
in a toilet. We're in a toilet, a backroom toilet, recording this. All three of us around one microphone.
This is the lens we go to, isn't it?
It is. It's what we do for the good of the cause.
We've had a week and a half since recording Tomo.
Just move up a bit, John.
We've had a week and a half since recording Tomo, and we're still doing it 45 minutes before we've got to go out and perform.
Before the biggest night of our life. Exaggeration or
yeah,
just me?
I think
you're panicking.
Probably,
yeah, I'm nervous, lads.
Are you?
I've got a tequila lined up.
Keep
it'll
it.
It'll be good. It'll be good. It's sold out at Nottingham, and there's two more coming this week. Halifax and Bradford. And there's all the rest of the dates are on Twitter. If you've not had a look, the tickets are going like hotcakes.
Tell you
so
what.
So getting quick.
Nicky Hunt was a good one, wasn't it?
Oh, aye.
He was.
Oh, aye. After we'd done it, I said, I think that's a two-parter and they're both going to be very good.
Yeah, you called it.
And I'm not wrong. It's very, very rarely I'm wrong.
Good old Bolton lads. Good.
Yeah.
On your holidays soon, aren't you?
Pardon?
On your holidays soon.
Sunday. Oh, Club Tropicana drinks are free.
Where are you going?
Fun and sunshine. I'm going to Spain, mate. Spain.
Oh, very exotic.
Nurka. If anybody's in Nurka, buy us a drink, please.
What's going to be your poolside attire?
A Speedo thong.
I might go over myself.
I might even. Oh, I've got some Crocs. A nice pair of
socks and Crocs.
Slazenger white socks. pair of black Crocs. Oh, fucking hell.
You shaved your back?
Not yet. I've got some pruning to do, I'm going to be honest with you. I've got titch mashing to do it.
We've got some good news, by the way.
Incredible news.
Good news. Who knows wins? Leagues are going back live this Saturday.
Get in.
Excellent. I've missed them, I'll be honest with you.
I have. My family have been fuming.
All my mates. Like, we're getting another league. Yes, we are. And we're coming
back
this Saturday. For all those who didn't play last time, if you don't know, you download the Who Knows Wins app on Google Play or the Apple Store. We've got 10 fixtures for the weekend. Everyone chucks the fiver in. Pick your 10 results. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? Who's going to draw?
The pot goes every week.
Every week.
It's a good split as well, isn't it?
Full pot.
I think it's 70%, 20%, 10% or something like that. Don't quote us on it. But
yeah, but it's you can still finish third and take your wife out for something to eat and a drink and all
come
that.
Come away with profit.
I'm not one for blowing my own trumpet, but I have actually got all 10 correct of these before.
You went on a bit of a hot streak, didn't you?
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks you were up there.
That's what's paid for Nurka.
Now it makes sense.
That's what's paid for my new Crocs. You're laughing at me, dickhead.
Yeah, so the new league will be live this, and we're having Parkies Plonkers again.
Yeah. Mm.
So even if you're terrible, you've got a chance of winning.
Yeah.
Because you'll get to choose the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, and you will get a shout out on here if you've been that dog shit.
Yes, you will indeed. So at least, you know, if you lose, you know, it's not going to the bookies. Some other lads having a pint.
Exactly. That's the thing. You're paying for somebody else to go to Nurka. So thank you. Thank you very much, troops.
You didn't have to wear your Crocs tonight, John.
Comfortable. Have you ever had a pair?
No.
Honestly, they are comfortable.
I'm a Skechers man.
If I wait on Saturday, I might even treat myself to a new pair of Crocs while I'm out there. Because there's a good chance I'm going to win.
Why the hell not?
Because I'm shit hot at this game.
Rainbow ones, I can see in.
Yeah?
With them cheap ones from one at shops.
Like his teeth.
Fucking hell, he don't need a tequila in that. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, so if you've not downloaded the app already, get over to the iTunes store or Google Play, download the app, search for the Under the Cosh League. It'll be live now, the league, so ready for Saturday's games. There's some internationals, there's some League One, there's some League Two. We've got a little bit of everything.
You don't have to get them all correct to win the pot. Mm. That's the big thing as well.
That's true, John.
You might get eight and win the pot. So
that's one of the perks, isn't it? Yeah, rather than doing 100%.
100%.
So more this weekend.
Yeah.
Alan Thompson.
Our first boxer?
Yes, I think it is. No. A wrestler we had, wasn't it? First boxer.
Because he has got the result since we recorded this.
Yeah.
Let's not disclose that.
No.
Just yet.
But no. I'll just give you... Just give you a heads up, he's still picking his teeth up. Bless him. Bit of a charity. Just charity, so it's fair enough. But
he should have got it.
Tomo's got teeth like me at minute.
but it's a good one.
Yeah, great career, by the way.
Fantastic career.
Great guy.
Bolton, Newcastle, Aston Villa,
Celtic.
Do you know what pisses off? I'm going to have a little rant now.
Oh.
When you put the we put the things on Twitter and Instagram, and there's always people, if we miss a club out,
you
could have played five games for a team. And don't forget so-and-so.
Mm, you can only get so many letters on Twitter.
180 characters.
So you tell them, arseholes.
I've told them, John.
Yeah, in no uncertain terms. Don't you be this aggressive all night, by the way.
You'll be getting that.
You better not be this aggressive all night. Right, lads.
Right, let's
get Tom a win, and we've got a live show of under 280
people. Wish us luck.
Yeah.
Tomo, let's be having you.
Yeah, come on, mate.
T-O-T-M-O. No, I've not got it wrong. T-O-T-O-M-T-O-M-O, Tomo. That's what we used to sing.
It's something like that, yeah.
Grammatically incorrect, that, as well.
Aye.
Grammatically,
because you're dramatically
incorrect.
That was a roller coaster.
Coming in.
I know you are.
You all right, mate?
All good, yes.
Thanks for coming on.
Much appreciated. Nice to see. I was on time this morning, but
we'll
not go into that part of you.
Morning after the night before, innit?
Yeah, the Man City game last night.
Nice bit of hospitality, lads, was it? Yeah,
it didn't suit us. That's not our bread and butter, that.
Was it not?
Nah.
There weren't enough bread and butter, that was the problem.
Yeah.
Collar and tie?
Nah, we dressed down, but it was just the portions and that.
Too big?
Far from it. Far fucking from it.
Two scallops, well, that big for a starter. We were livid, weren't we?
That's no good, is it?
I thought they came warm, me scallops, but they were fucking freezing, weren't they? No, shite. Man City shite.
Not for you, that. Not for you, Port.
The pies would have been no good with your training because you've got a boxing match coming up, haven't you?
I am trying to watch what I'm doing. Still getting me fix of chocolate, like. But I've got a fight coming up, so trying to.
Lad from Blue, is it?
Yeah, Blue. So normally anything Blue with me, Celtic Rangers connections a little bit. So hopefully that'll give us a bit of inspiration. The lad Simon Webb from Blue, yeah.
Did it just come out of nowhere?
They got in touch with us about 6 weeks ago. I think there's 18 fighters, 9 fights. Most of them signed up about 12 weeks ago, I think. So I'm like halfway down the line from where most of the rest of them are. So I'm on catch up. So if it doesn't go well on the Saturday night, that'll be my excuse. I signed up late.
I think this will be out after the fight. So if...
Oh, will it?
If you win, we'll keep it in. But if you get beat, we'll just...
Yeah.
I'm odds on probably to get beat, so
can you make it so you do get beat and we can have a bet on it?
One, two or three, do you want us to go down?
You got the book coming out as well soon?
Yeah, I'm proofreading it at the minute, so hopefully that'll be out probably on Kindle end of October. And then on the shelves, maybe early November. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, yeah.
Have you enjoyed the process? Like going through...
Yeah, it was hard work initially. I moved into Jamie's house, Jamie Boyle, the author. for a week. It was fucking intense living with him for a week, let me tell you. I don't know how his missus puts up with him. I don't know if you've met him or not, but he's full on. So it was hard work, but on the Friday when I left his house to go back to Lynn where I live, it was the traffic was a nightmare on the M62, but I was just relieved to be out of his house and in the car going back to Lynn with the window down, chilling out, because it was a bit therapeutic, you know, getting a lot of shit off your chest and stuff that's been in the back of your mind for years and stuff. So it was hard work, but I enjoyed the process.
Is that the thing to do then when you're writing a book? Just to go and take yourself away, move in with him?
Well, the other alternative, I suppose, was either on the phone or Zoom, something like that. But
not the same, is it?
No, I just thought, go in for a week, hit it hard, and then even though it was tough going, we got it done and dusted rather than 4, 5, 6 weeks on the phone, an hour or two a day. We were doing 7, 8 hours a day at his house, so it was intense, but I was pleased when I got it done. Yeah.
So started at Newcastle, but before that, Wall's End Boys Club, is it?
I started at Wall's End, along with many others.
A lot of them. Big names have come through there, haven't they?
Lads older than myself. My age group was like myself, Lee Clark, Steve Watson, who Party knows well, Robbie Elliott. And you got Alan Shearer, slightly older than us, Steve Bruce older than that, Peter Beardsley older than that, Neil MacDonald, Michael Carrick a little bit younger than me. So there's been a conveyor belt over the years, yeah. I mean, there hasn't been anyone recently, I would say, of any standout. So
are they still going?
They're still going, but I don't know if the academy systems took that away from the boys' clubs or what, but there hasn't seemed to have been anyone for a few years that's broken through. But a great conveyor belt over the few years, and that's where I started off, yeah.
How old were you when Newcastle signed
I think I was 13 when you initially get signed, when you can actually sign a form, but I was going in, back then it was called a Centre of Excellence, and so I was going in from 8, 9 year old, a couple of nights a week, then you get to 13, 14. Not sure what it was like when the lads were playing, but when you sign for a club, you could still play for your boys' clubs and you can do bits and bobs, play for your school, play for your district, play for your county. Once you're associated with a professional club, now that's it. You can only play for them, which for me, I'm not sure if that's the right process for young lads. I think you should be playing for as many teams and getting as many touches of the ball you can, not just with your academy. But back then it was great. I loved the way it worked.
I don't know about you, but I always enjoyed playing with my mates at school and stuff more than when it got too serious. I didn't enjoy it as much.
You used to enjoy playing with your mates' sisters at school as well, you.
Needless, isn't it, Tom?
Needless.
It's true. I just wondered what you meant when you said playing with your mates, but not yet. It was great playing with different teams, whereas now the kids, they're just playing for the basic academies, whoever they're with, you know. You know, I think you get to know different people, and you don't always play on good pitches like they do nowadays. You go and play on shit heaps, and it's a great ground and improves you as a player, in my opinion. Well, I know the academy system's been going for a while now, but I'm not sure if they get, you know, everything their own way.
Are you looking up to in that first team?
I mean, it wasn't Newcastle, weren't Premier League at the time. They were down in the doldrums, really. But when I was a young lad on the terraces, watching before I signed for the club, you had Keegan roundabout then coming back in 83, Terry McDermott, Chris Waddle, Gazza breaking in the team, Imre Vardy. So it was a great Newcastle team to watch as a kid. But then eventually when I left school and joined the first team, had lads like Mickey Quinn, very similar player to Parky, you know.
Very similar shape and all.
Score goals for fun, not the most mobile. Bit like another teammate of mine, John Orton, was the same, you know. Good target man, technically good. So Quinny was great around the place. So it was a good grounding, seeing, you know, real good pros who'd played a lot of games, and they didn't take any shit from us young lads, that was for sure. They weren't scared about giving us a clip. Oh, yeah, if you step out of the line, you'd get a clip without a doubt, yeah. Yeah, off those lads.
You get one.
Got a few. without a doubt, yeah. You get locked in the boot room and lights off and given a hiding or something like that, you know, old school.
How was our dealers?
Brilliant. He'd often join in the little circle before the game before training, and he'd have a fag in his mouth and he'd one touch, just didn't give the ball away. He'd never be in the middle. And then he dropped the odd story in about Maradona and people like that, you know, Mario Kempes, and you just think, all right, not a problem then. You just dropped Ozzy and I'll pick that name up, Kempes. World Cup winner 78 and all that, yeah. No, he was different class, Ozzy, yeah. We couldn't understand him, but we knew what he was trying to do.
Nearly took a term for the whistle when you were, what, 16?
16, yeah, just after I left school, joined Newcastle. We'd been down to Elland Road to watch a reserve team game. And we had a bad car accident on the way back. And yeah, it was a mess. And I had a real bad neck injury. So I was very lucky.
And there's four other youth team lads
in there. Was me and four others in the old style mini. So it was pretty cramped, if you can remember the size of the old minis. That was 1990. So I missed a good 14, 15 months of me.
Proper progression time.
Watching my mates getting in the first team while I was out with this big RoboCop and neck brace on, you know what I mean? And sitting on a bike pedaling all day while they were travelling, playing games and stuff was hard to do. But luckily got through it. Yeah.
Was it up in the air whether you would play again?
It was touch and go at the start whether I'd walk again. So
fuck me.
There's a lot about it, and the book goes into quite a lot of detail. The physio from Newcastle at the time, still at Newcastle now, a lad called Derek Wright, he writes a bit in the book about how severe the injury was and how lucky I was, so very grateful to be
on. Newcastle's done well to sort of stand by you then, really, aren't they? If you said you were out for 14 months at that age.
Yeah, even on my 17th birthday, they weren't sure I was going to get back to playing again. They let us sign a pro contract just out of looking after us and trying to give us a lift type of thing, which it did. It gave us a lift, signing a pro contract, and I hadn't played a dozen games in a youth team. So shows you how highly they thought of us and they stood by us massively, yeah. But it was a tough time for me and my family because, like I said, at the beginning, when I first went into hospital in Durham, they were unsure if I'd walk again initially. Then I had a big neck brace on, got out, and then that wasn't healing, so I had to go back in and to the Freeman Hospital in Newcastle and get surgery in the January, which was a nightmare for a young lad getting neck surgery because you don't know what's going to happen. So tough time, but luckily come through it, yeah.
Was it one of them, you know, when you got back, was it something that spurred you on over to take it for granted? You know, you always wanted to...
I never took anything for granted, and, you know, I didn't really suffer any bad injuries throughout my career in terms of ankles, knees, hips or anything like that, just... I had that bad one in the car accident at the start and then just got a couple of little niggles on the way. So I was lucky really after that. I mean, I suffer a bit now. The back and the neck sometimes. So
don't say that. If Simon Webb's fucking listening,
I don't think he's a piece of piss. That's what my dad said was the other week when I told my dad I was in this boxing thing. He was like, are you taking a piss or what? He said, one good punch and your neck will go. I've had 15, 20 years heading the football. Well, yeah. I didn't really fucking head it, to be honest, but, you know, hopefully the neck will stand up.
At what age and how long from getting back from your neck to your debut?
I had the car crash in September 90. I think it was November, December 91. So it was well over a year, you know. But I was sub and I remember... we had to have a collar and tie for the first team game the next day at St James's against Cambridge, it might have been. And I had to go down to Next in the city centre and get myself a jacket and a tie and a shirt and a pair of strides. I mean, it was this maroon blazer thing I bought. I must have looked the right knob. And I turned up on the Saturday and I was sub. So he goes out, warms up, blah, 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 and comes in after the warm-up, ready to get your gear on to sit on the bench and that. And Lee Clark's running off the pitch to play at St James's, some steps as you come off the pitch to get into the dressing rooms. And he's running up the steps and something goes in his foot. He'd fractured something in his foot. So they comes in, manager comes in, Tomo, you're playing? I'm like, fucking hell. I ain't got any time to prepare for it. Like, you know what I mean? So it wasn't a bad thing because I wouldn't have probably slept the night before if I'd known I'd been starting. So because Lee got injured in the warm-up, I end up starting a game. So, aye, Ozzy, give us me chance.
How'd you do? First game.
I done all right, I think. I scored, we won 2-0. I put a good ball in at the Leasers end for Steve Howe. He scored a good header, so an assist in my first game. I was happy with that, but I can't remember much about it apart from that.
Yeah. Well, that was you in then. Manager trusted you.
I got in.
You must have had a good night that night in Newcastle, eh?
You were? Don't think I was 18, Parky, so I wouldn't have been allowed out. No, we would have had a good night. probably with the lads, Watto and Clarky and Steve Howe and people like that, Lee Makel and stuff, so I would have been a good night.
Did they get you going out?
The older ones.
They'd often drag us out. Tommy Wright, goalkeeper. Forgot to mention Kevin Sheedy before. Sheed's like the pint, Kevin Dillon. So they'd often drag us out on a night out. Remember one night they dragged us out. We'd been to some awards ceremony at the Civic Centre in the town. And they've all got their dicky bow ties and that, the lads. Well, me, Steve Watson and Lee Clark haven't got them, so we go into this place in the city centre to hire suits. So I thought, that would be a bit different. We'll get the black strides, white jacket, white shirt, and a red tie. So we went to the awards ceremony, and we ended up in this place in Newcastle called Grey's Club, which was quite well known for the older birds coming in. You know, we're 18, 19, but some of the older lads were in the element. Well, if they were single, they would have been in their element. And we get to chatting to these women, me, Steve and Lee, and we must have said something under water, one of us must have, and they just threw these pints on me. Well, they weren't even our suits, so we had to take the suits back the next day. So we take the suits back into this place in Newcastle next to the monument, and the bloke's like, the jackets were just full of beer stains and all that. Just said with a dry cleaning bill. So now we would get a night out with the older boys, but yeah, good drink, man. We were just young lads. We couldn't keep up with them in those days.
Was Killer Klein there?
Killer would have been there, yeah.
We've heard, like, had a few of the lads on from that time. They said he was the main man.
Aye, Killer, he would organise most of it. We got promoted, and the gaffer said, get yourselves away. We went to Iron Apple. Don't know if anyone's been on him. If Nash has been on him, he might have told you the story. So we've been out on the lash in Iron Apple. We all go back, like, you know, early evening to have a bit of a kip and a shower, get freshened up after the beach. Well, Killer's fell asleep in the bar in this little place we're staying in. She's had a few scoops. So one of the lads, Killer's got his tash and his beard and his long hair. One of the lads shaves half a Killer's tash off when he's asleep. So when he wakes up sober, Killer's like, what the? He's gone mental.
Loved it as well, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, it was his pride and joy. What's his missus going to say when he lands back in Newcastle and he's got half a tash?
He's not keeping half a tash.
That's what he was worried about. His missus when he landed in Newcastle, what she'd say, because she loved his tash and his crazy. And anyways, his initial thoughts were me, Watto, and Nash, Lee Clark. So apparently he's on the warpath, where we've got to do a runner. And we've still got our beachwear on. We thought we can't even go back now because he thinks it's one of us. Young lads had a drink taking the piss. As it happens, it was one of the senior players. And I think it was Derek Fazakli who was looking after us at the time. He was the first team coach under Kevin Keegan. And Faz had to calm him down and tell him it wasn't us, but we still weren't going back, even though he wasn't. I think he got to the bottom of who it was, Killer. I think it was Barry Venison it might have been. If Killer doesn't know, sorry, Ven, as I've just grasped. But, no, I'm sure they got to the bottom of it, but, oh, man.
Yeah, Killer. Do you want to kill him then? Or do you want to kill you?
Oh, he was on a warpath, Killer, yeah. One, he was probably still half cut because he's been out all day on the lash. But that was his pride and joy, man. That and his ponytail and his barge up somewhere in the hills in Yorkshire. But he was a proper character killer, yeah.
I can't remember. It might have been Bez that was saying that after that, it was never the same because he was held in such high regard. It was a bit of a lack of respect type thing. And he said that it just never was the same after that. Or he wasn't. I think so did his hair go as well?
I don't know if they cut his ponytail off or it was half his because his tash was massive.
Yeah,
it was like a big ferret over his top lip type of thing. But they might have cut his ponytail now you said that, yeah. But it didn't go down well. I don't think Killer found it funny at all.
Yeah,
and you don't want to cross Killer to be fair.
No, a big old unit, weren't he?
Still on the barge now, isn't he?
I think he spends half his time on the barge, half the year, somewhere over here, and then Portugal, I think, the rest of the time. I haven't seen him for a few years, but great fella. Great lad, having a dressing room.
You're saying you wouldn't have slept now before. Did you suffer from nerves before a game?
I did. Once the game started, I was all right. But I used to spew up before games. Yeah. Used to spew up.
I've had a few lads.
Before the game and then half-time, I was a nightmare.
Get one out at half-time as well?
I'd get one out at half-time, whether it was in the dressing room or on the pitch. I mean, the groundsman at Celtic Park used to go mental with me. Patches where I'd spewed up when I'd go back.
So even that far into your career, like
even towards the end, the last time I played a run of games would have been on loan at Hartlepool towards the end of my career.
Yeah.
And I went back to Leeds for the last half of the last season. I didn't play much at Leeds when I went back, but even at Hartlepool just before I retired, I'd still do it.
When did it start?
Started soon as I was a kid when I got into the first team at Newcastle.
Just in the first team, not when you were younger.
Not younger, no, but then Bruce Rioch talks about it in my book. He does a little chapter in between, like a little piece in between chapters. And I read it the other day and he was talking about Stanley Matthews used to do it. So Matthews didn't do it. Sammy Lee used to do it at Liverpool, I found out. So I think it's more common than you think. But the pre-match meal would come back up and, you know, whatever I was drinking at half-time would come back up. And
was there ever a time, you know, like, as the game's going on and you haven't felt sick or haven't wanted to be sick, were you thinking, I don't feel right, are you? I need to be sick.
No, I think that's what it was all the way through. I needed to do it. to make us feel better. I don't know. It was just one of them things. But as soon as the game started, I wouldn't get out of breath and think, oh, I need to do it now. It was just when it had stopped. I don't know if I was thinking about it or what. I did go to get some help on it, but it wasn't pretty inconclusive, really. Mm-hmm. Just said it might have been a fucking fear of getting injured after having a serious car accident, neck injury, but
oh, spit bucket might be much. Getting some stick when you get it ringed.
I was getting battered. I haven't even thought of that. Imagine spewing up before getting in the fucking ring. Holy shit, or in the ring.
He might flip on its eye.
Be like that to me corner man, give us the bucket. At least he's got a bucket. There's no buckets on the pitch, is there? But
at least he'll have an excuse as well if it goes tits up. I've had a bug. I've struggled.
Even yet, I don't know, have you done them COVID tests when you could have put it down your throat? Anything in my mouth, I'm a nightmare, me. Unless it's a pair of tits, like. but that gum shield in my mouth, do you know what I mean? It just makes you want to, like, the gag reflex type of thing. So I've even when I've been out running and doing these power walks and that, I've been trying to wear the gum shield just to get used to something in my mouth. So I've never even thought about spewing up before. Like,
cheers.
Thanks for bringing that up. No, but there was one story we were playing an away game. It was after Ozzy O'Deal as I left, and Kevin was the manager at Newcastle, Kevin Keegan. Terry Mack was number two. And I didn't think I was playing. It was an evening kickoff. So we'd had pre-match and gone back to the room, and that you got an hour to kill before you get on the bus, haven't you, before you go to the game. And I was still hungry after pre-match. I didn't think I was starting. So I'd ordered some chocolate gatto from room service. Anyways, we're having a team meeting before we get on the bus downstairs in the meeting rooms. Kevin names the team and I'm in the team. Well, gets to the ground, don't we? I'm in the sink, in the toilets, in the... chocolate gatto all over the shop and all that. Goes out to warm up. Kevin goes in the urinals for a pee in there. Terry, come and have a look at this. And one of the sinks was full of chocolate gatto. He got Terry to ring the hotel and found out who'd ordered chocolate gatto. So that didn't go down well. He actually put it in his boot. Kevin, he put that in his boot. I was thinking, holy shit, he's battered us there. But that was the early days.
Did he tell us about it before the game then?
No, but he battered us after. He absolutely battered us after the game. What are you doing? I went, I was still hungry. Didn't think I was playing. Well, I hadn't named the fucking team, so it's probably the wrong thing to do, but...
Solid detective work.
That one way getting crazy, isn't it?
I got Terry to ring the hotel and see who'd order chocolate. got some spewing stories, man.
When it come to moving to Bolton, did you feel like you needed to progress, get more, play more football?
Aye, we had a couple of lads older than me at Newcastle at the time. I mentioned Kevin Sheedy, you know, world of a left foot, absolute worldie. Scott Sellers was older than me, so there were two lads there who I didn't see myself getting a lot of football in the team. I just thought the time was to move on, and as much as I didn't want to, Newcastle was my boyhood club. So
how old were you?
I was 19, I think, when I left.
That's a big decision, though, still at 19, isn't it?
Aye. So it was just time to move on and try and play some games. Obviously, I wanted to make the most of it after being out for a long period with a neck injury. I just wanted to go and play.
Did they want you to stay?
They offered us a deal to stay, but I didn't see myself playing and I wanted to play. I'd had a taste of first team football at Newcastle. Yeah. I played only about 20 games, but I wanted to play. And
that's no age now, is it?
20? No.
19, 20. 19, 20, like... No. You know, the lads who were playing at City last night, getting the first chance probably at 20, 21, 22. Yeah. And just thinking about breaking into the team.
Well, I've got a young relative who's two of them at Newcastle, the Longstaff brothers, they're related. And young Matty's 21, he's gone on loan to Aberdeen just to get some probably games under his belt. Hopefully he goes back to Newcastle and be a better player for it. But I just thought at the time I was 18, 19, I wanted to go and play and Bolton come in. And I knew Colin Todd from the northeast. His son was the same age as me, being at Newcastle, Andy Todd. And he'd mentioned it to Bruce Riott and they come in and, I fancied it. So that was how the Bolton move come about.
Did you hit the ground running? Or did it take you a while?
I was in and out at first. Bruce had a really good team. So it took us a bit of time to settle. You know, I lived on my own, got in a bit of bother. Bruce being the kind of manager he wasn't happy because I was a young lad, got my dad down for a chat to my dad and moved us into digs type of thing. So took us a bit of time to settle, but once I found my feet, it was great.
Bit of bother going out and then finally.
I got involved with Phil Brown, John McGinley, Aidan Davison. Don't know if anyone knows Aidan. Come across him.
Goalkeeper.
Aye. Absolute cracker jack of the highest order. I'll tell you some stories about the big fella. Holy shit. But Aye, well, he was from the northeast. Aidan Davison, Phil Brown was from the northeast. Yeah. I was from the northeast, so they were kind of lads I got around. John McGinley was a great lad, so I think Bruce wasn't so happy that I was knocking around with the older players type of thing, but they were the kind of lads I got myself attached to and got in a bit of bother.
And someone did mention, though, talking about Aidan Davison, was there something with a bet on the buzz on the way home from an away game?
Yeah, there was a few times I was there. There'd be a cord school going at the back. And back in the day, if we had a game away from home and then you've got a 3-4-hour bus journey back to Bolton and you've got a decent result, the gaffer would let you get a few beers on and that on the bus. You get out the ground and you try and find the first off licence. And the lads were playing cards. McGinn was playing, Brownie would have been playing, Aidan Davison, can't remember who the fourth player was. And Aidan sat next to the window, so a few cans in that. You need a piss, don't you? Don't want to disrupt the card game, so you just fill the bottles up and that. So the lads would just pass the bottle around, fill the bottle, empty bottle of water up. Big fella's had a few cans in, he's like, lads, have a whip round and I'll neck that bottle. And we're like, nah. So we'd have a whip round the bus, five or a man. And the big fella just, he'd have a dabble at that and he'd just go, oh, lovely that. And then he'd just neck it and pocket his cell 100-odd quid, like, type of thing. So proper old school, the big fella.
It's warm, it's probably a little bit frothy on top.
Yeah, it's got that froth on it.
He loved the crack, the big fella, so.
Strange cats for them keepers, aren't they?
They're a different breed. I mean, couldn't tell off the stories about some of them, but they're definitely a cut above the rest.
Two promotions,
yeah.
Bolton.
It was a good time. Bruce was different class. Bruce Riott.
Was he?
Aye, he was different class. I mean, we weren't like an out and out footballing team. We were fit. We had good players. We could play. Don't get us wrong. You don't win the championship as by a distance that we did without being a decent team. But he had us fit. He had a good mixture of senior players, you know, McGinley, Coyley, Mixu, Patalainen, Tags. And then he had good younger lads, Stubbsy, Jason McAteer, myself, Nathan Blake was, you know, quality. So it was a good combination and there was no coincidence that we were successful at that level. And then maybe the Premier League was probably a step, probably too much for us. The first season at the Reebok, we were unlucky to go down. But no, it was a great time, great period in the club's history, without a doubt.
How was Coyle as a player? Because we've had lads on who've played under him, and they just say he was
a live wire, lively in the dressing room, lively on the pitch.
Did he used to commentate on his own shooting drills?
I loved it.
Coyle.
You know, when we used to do drills, I used to be Peter Wyth when I was a kid, even though I can't head the football. I don't know why I was Peter Wyth, but Coyle was always Coyle, like, you know what I mean? To be fair, he weren't a bad head tennis player. He was a better head tennis player than he was a footballer, Coyle.
Are you going to be today? I'm going to be Owen Coyle, aren't I?
Yeah. Unbelievable, but... I weren't bad at head tennis, Coyley, but chirpy, man. Never shut up. But he was always the driver on the night out. He didn't drink, Coyley, so always had his cans of full fat Coke.
Not Iron Brew?
No, he was a Coca-Cola man, I think. Aye. Seen him on a telly the other week when he was, like, whatever job he had, and he's thinking, how's he so fat? He doesn't even drink. You know what I mean? But he was a live wire in the dressing room, Coyley.
Would Phil Brown get some stick with his tan? Because he was always well tanned, wasn't he?
I liked the sunbed, but I think he might have been a bit natural as well, you know.
Yeah.
I loved the sun. He had a sunbed in the house, Brownie.
So one of them that go over the bed?
Aye, one of them that you stand up when you finish with it.
So green goggles.
Yeah. I love the sunbed, Brownie.
Fucking hell. Just sums him up, that. He's got his own sunbed. He's got a sunbed. I don't like him, mate.
That was before sunbeds were around.
Yeah.
Did you play for him?
Did you ever? Yeah.
You weren't playing in the game when he... made a tit of himself.
Oh, no. But I enjoy watching him crumble after that.
It was a strange thing to do, wasn't it, that one?
The thing is, it's just typical him. All about him, innit?
Yeah.
You know, to make a bit of a fucking scene for himself and get his Senate press. But.
He'd often do things, Brownie, wouldn't he, to try and get a reaction off people. One of them was, we'd been on a night out in Manchester, and again, it was Brownie, McGinley, Aidan Davison and myself. I was driving at the time because it was in Manchester. It was an awards gig on. And I said, I'll drive. I had a little Fiesta XR2i at the time. I thought I was the bollocks, little white thing. Bought it off Franz car. Ooh, Franzy car. And anyways, we go to this do. They're having a drink in the afternoon. It was a Boddington's do at one of the hotels in Manchester. Cantona won the main award, but John McGinley had won one of the monthly awards, so we got invited through John. So they've had a good scoop, and they were on Deansgate in Manchester, Brownie being Brownie. He's chipping away, Aidan Davison chipping away, and I'm thinking, big shake, he's getting a bit angry. He'll either give him a right hand or something's going to kick off. And anyways, Brownie was chipping away, and Aidan's going, goalkeeper should earn, what outfield players earn, blah, blah, blah. And Brownie was just trying to get a reaction off him. Next thing, big Aidan just picks a bar stool up, whizzes it through a window. Aye, well, we got locked up. Busy's come, Nick, we get locked up in Bootle Street Police Station in Manchester. I'm sober. Norm McGinley was outside in a phone box. He was trying to find out if he was in the Scotland squad. Right? So he just missed it, McGinn. Me, Aidan and Brownie got nicked, got locked up in Bootle Street Police Station. Aidan's pissing in the back of the police van when we're on the way to the station, and I'm thinking, what's going? I've got my feet up like that, trying not to get pissed on. And anyways, we got locked up for the night, and had to try and explain that to the manager the next day, but he'd already knew it was on the front page of the Bolton Even News, so caused trouble. But it was Brownie. It was Brownie who instigated it all, you know what I mean?
Chipping and chipping.
And I'm thinking, I'm sober, I shouldn't be getting locked up here, but we didn't anyways.
It's a good alibi, that, isn't it? Being the phone box. I was on the phone.
The thing is, when they let us out in the morning, it was a rush to get the training. We got black ties on as well, so we hadn't even got time to go and get changed. We had to turn up in my whistles. At least I was sober, but my car had been clamped. We had parked my car overnight, it was clamped. So then I had to try and sort that out. I'm thinking, oh, I couldn't get any worse. Then when I went in the gaffer's office, he just pulled the Bolton Even News out after training. He already had it. So he went through as like a dose of salts. But I don't even blame Aidan for throwing the bar stool through the window. I blame Brownie.
When you turn around corner and see car clamped and you're in suit, pissy shoes.
And you're in a hurry.
Pissy shoes.
It's half nine in the morning.
I thought you were going to say through fucking Phil through the window.
Or he could have done the big fella if he wanted.
Any fans for that?
Oh, yeah, we got fined, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think he hit us all with a week. Typical McGinley, he got away with it. he was in the phone box ringing, trying to get in touch with Craig Brown, so he was in the Scotland squad. He watched us get through in the back of the police van, McGinn as well.
Time to go.
He didn't even put any more money in the meter, lazy bastard. I was asking about Sasa Sercik.
Sasa was a talented lad, but when he first signed, man, he must have come over from wherever he come over from and just had the same gear until he got paid. And then all of a sudden he's coming in Versace underpants and matching socks and everything, Larry. But good player, Sasa. And then he got a great move to Villa, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. You being a Bolton fan, you must have loved watching him.
Oh, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But he was in Serbian Big Brother, I think he won it. And there's videos really? Of him, like, in the street, raving with his car. Car turned up, full blast. He was a bit...
What, recent?
Yeah.
Last time I seen him, he was face down asleep in a hotel corridor a few years ago, playing a charity match at the Reebok. We'd had a night out and I'm going back to my hotel room. He was just on the floor, face down, asleep in the hotel corridor. So he had a good night, I think. It's normally the other way around.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How long was it before you started thinking that you could get a move?
It's probably the season in the Premiership, the last season, but we got relegated at Chelsea, last game of the season, and I knew there'd been a lot of people there during that season, and I'd done all right. I think I scored about 12 or 13 goals from midfield, so obviously didn't want to get relegated, but it was in the back of my mind, if we get relegated and get a chance of a move, I don't really want to go back to the Championship. I was probably 23 at the time, probably played a couple hundred games at Bolton and wanted the opportunity to probably go on and play back in the Premiership, you know.
But you were happy. You're playing consistently, doing well.
No, Bolton was brilliant. If Bolton had stayed up, I possibly could have stayed for another season or two, without a doubt, yeah. But it was just the fact that we'd gone down and I'd spoken to Colin Todd, was then the manager, and they'd paid 250 grand for us as a young lad from Newcastle, and they ended up selling us for 4.75. So I think they were happy and I was happy with the profit that they made, and time to move on to different things, you know.
How was Gregory? Because he seems Phil Brown-esque in terms of...
Chocolate.
Yeah,
I was a bit like that. Obviously, don't want to go too much into it, but because there's a lot in the book type of thing. But a lot of it was about him, and I think we'd won the first 10 or 11 games of my first season and beat a club record. And we played Southampton at the Dell to break the record and won. And he got us all on the pitch. No, like what you were saying before, Party. Mm. Huddersfield hadn't lost in 50-odd games, and then you signed and they lost the next two. It's typical, innit? Would won us, I don't know if it was the first 11 or 12 games at Villa, and then the game we broke the record, he got us all together with the staff on the pitch at the Dell, the old Southampton ground, a big pitcher. We lost the next game. Do you know what I mean? It was one of them that, did you need to do it type of thing, come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
So that epitomised what he was about, really. It was one of them, was sitting in the dressing room after the game. Shouldn't have done that photo, really. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Do it after the run's ended. Do you know, not while it's still going. So, yeah, that was Greg's.
Big characters, though. Big Dion. Southgate.
Aye. Big Hugo. God rest him. Hugo Ekiog. Great around the dressing room. Pain in the arse in the hotel night before. Having your dinner and that. He'd send his food back. It was never good enough. His brother was a chef, so... Big Hugo was one of them. That steak's not dug. I get it back, and then he'd send it back three or four times. Big Hugo's, God bless him. But that was David Ginola, Paul Merson, David James, Benito Carbone. There was some absolute fruit loops. There was some fruit loops. Bosnich. I mean, there's some cracker jacks in that dressing room. There was.
Fuck, mate.
Gary Charles, you know, Charlo.
Right back.
Yeah. There was some lunatics in that dressing room, Villa. I mean, some proper egos. Remember being pre-season, we're in Lisbon, played Benfica, and the day after the game, the gaffer said, oh, he's going to have the day off, go down the beach, have a few drinks, get a bite to eat. So we're all sat around a couple of big tables, and some of the names you just mentioned there, like David Ginola's there, and David's getting the centre of attention. The women are coming up, photographs, he's doing the lot, you know, the hairs, everyone knows who David is, even in Portugal.
We were just like on his shoulder, just trying
to... I was waiting for the knockdown. I'm picking the bits up, mate, I'm sat next to him, do you know what I mean? But some of the lads couldn't handle it. Some of the big hitters, Merce and Bosnich, Gareth weren't too bad because Gareth didn't have that big an ego, but some of them... JMO, David James, they didn't like the attention that David was getting, and they kind of squared the bill up and done one. I just thought, fuck it, I'm man-marking David.
I'm not leaving.
So David and his little disciples behind him, me and Steve watching Steve Stone, Gareth Southgate. You know, the only way we were going to pull a bird was David.
That's shit from them, innit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like...
Just that's what some people are like, though, isn't it? You know, it's just, but us being the young lads, yeah, David, like, he's a god to me.
Our incredible worry.
David?
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, I was lucky to play with a couple of players who each foot was as good as the other. Beardsley being one. Peter was brilliant. Brilliant player and two brilliant feet. A lad called Lubo Moravcek, who you probably haven't heard of, played for Celtic, who Zidane said he's the best player he ever played with. So if Zidane said that, you think, wow. I think that was it, Marseille, where he played with Lubo. But David was the same. You'd say, are you left footed or right footed? You didn't know. Well, I was just out and out, left footed. Not sure what you were. But
I was no footed.
In the air. Chest just and in the chest.
Not off, but
Ginola was one of them where you just, in training, you'd think, he hadn't got a weak foot. He was one of them. So talented, I. But Beardsley and Moravcek were the same. Did you see much of Beardsley when he played for Bolton?
Yeah.
I don't think he played an awful lot. It was towards the end, right at the back end of his career.
Yeah, that must have been, for you, personally, it was someone you admired.
Well, I knew him from the North East. He's from Wallsend, as I'm from, so I knew Peter, and obviously grew up watching him as a kid at Newcastle. To play with him at Bolton was brilliant. He still had it, but I don't think he's seen eye to eye with a manager at the time, Colin Todd.
Yeah,
I think it was vice versa. One didn't like the other, and the other didn't like the other one. So
I bet you never rung round Peter Beardsley on a night out, did you, for the knockdown?
Yeah, absolutely bang on. I don't think he ever had a night out with him, Peter. No, I don't think he was out. No. Yeah.
The leaders in men's grooming are supporting us once again, and they're back with
the 4.0.
It sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds incredible.
It sounds as though you could cut the lawn with it. Yeah. Never mind your fucking balls.
Sort your package out with the Manscaped 4.0 performance package. Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah!
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
No, I don't know where I came from, Chris. That's what Manscaped does.
Yes, you can join the 2 million other men. That's 4 million pristine testicles, that. You can join the other 2 million and the 4 million testicles by going to www.manscaped.com, getting on the performance package and putting in the code COSH20. Do you know what the performance package comes with? There it is in the little bag.
I'll show you now, Chrissy.
It comes with the Lawnmower 4.0. Yes, to give that clinical cut around the testicles. No nips, no cuts.
Here she is.
You can just go wild on the nuggets with that.
Oh, I'm glad you've...
There's a bit of debris on the...
I'm glad you've left them airs on there for us, Matthew. Very much appreciated.
An easy ride from the gooch to the shaft.
It is a comfortable
shaft. Whips it all off. No... Who's been using that?
Look at the state of that there.
Not only...
Comes in handy, by the way.
You get the weed like whacker, which is for the nose, and the lug holes.
And it does work on my nose.
For the ears, for the nose.
It works on mine, so...
It'll work on anything.
Try it and test it.
And then once you've done that, the...
deodorant. It does come in handy.
Yes, the crop preserver... Ball deodorant, and the crop reviver, ball toner. So, get out them creases. Nobody likes a rinky sack.
You know, like when you go to the you know when you go to the barbers and you ask for number one or number two.
Yeah,
you can do it on here.
What's your preference, John?
Oh, I'm down to the wood. I'm the big dog.
I'm
down to the wood.
Literally.
So if you down to the warm wood. So if you want it a little bit longer or a little bit shorter, it's available.
Ooh. And two free gifts come with it as well. That's your boxer shorts and your little bag, which is nice, isn't it?
I've upgraded that to my number one wash bag.
Good stuff, though. Get the 20% off with the code COSH20. All you're going to do, go to www.manscaped.com, put in the code COSH20, you get 20% off.
How did Gregory handle that? We talked about the loose cannons. Did he struggle with big?
He liked a fact as well, David, didn't he?
David did, loved one, yeah.
So would he, like Chris said, would he just let it slide because he was so good?
Who, David?
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't think he's one of them who'd go in the dressing room and have a fag at half time, where I've played with players who just walk in the dressing room and have one in the
toilet. It's more common than you think.
Like, it is more common, but Greg struggled a bit with a big hit, as in my opinion.
No, didn't like confrontation or?
No, not really. He'd try and avoid it if he could avoid it, yeah. Obviously, he had like Mercy at the manage, who was obviously difficult to manage, Merce.
Would he just give him free rein? Because we speak a lot about lads who are so good, but they kind of could be a problem. You know, like the teammates might be like, how's he getting away with that? Manager gives them a better...
He wouldn't like Bruce Rioch. Anyone stepped out the line, he didn't give a shit if it was his main man or not his main man, a young lad playing for the reserves, he'd hit them hard. Whereas Greg's give some of the big hit, as in my opinion, a bit of leeway. We'd be going out at 25 past 10 to start at half 10, and Bosnich would be just getting out his car, strutting in. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, hold on, you know, it's all the same. We've all got the same rule sheet we've signed, type of thing. So I struggled with he just let them rein do what they wanted, basically.
But I can't imagine Dion and Gareth Southgate taking too kindly to it either, though.
It was one of them. He was the manager, and I think he had rules for others that rather than, you know, everyone off the same him sheet, he let a few get away with it, in my opinion.
I don't think he can work that.
No.
I don't think
That's maybe why it didn't work, because we had a squad capable of doing good things, and that's maybe why we didn't. We did finish in the top four, but you know, we got beat in the FA Cup final off Chelsea in 2000. That's maybe why that Villa team didn't win anything, because
I think everyone, the players you had, man.
Oh, it was mad. I mean, Carbone was different class, great player. Dion was at the time flying. David, Merce was, whatever you think of Merce as a person, he was an absolute magician. Brilliant on the ball, just purely one-footed outside of the right foot, could do anything. Julian Joachim was flying at the time, but for whatever reason, we just weren't successful.
Could you tell Merson had the issue? Did he used to, could you just buy your own
all the time,
and stuff?
All the time, yeah. He was he was in the manager's office regular. He'd probably go through spells where maybe he wasn't having a drink or he wasn't gambling, but then you kind of knew when he was as well. So obviously he's outspoken about it. Everyone knows his issues he's had. So it's obviously tough for people, innit?
Yeah, and with Stan?
Stan was great. Big Stan, aye. And hell, we haven't even mentioned Stan when we're talking about characters, have we? Stan was great for me when I first went there. He was one of the ones who put his arm round us and looked after us, if you want, aye.
Was he Marmite?
I think he come across as he was. But then when you got to know him, he was quite a deep thinker and quite a bright lad, you know.
Because we do get a mixed bag of lads that they've played with him.
Well, you do, don't you? Mm. You get a mixed bag on everyone, you know. He would say what he wanted and when he wanted. He didn't give a shit. Some days, I mean, I love training, you know. I hate being injured, you know. Stan would come out some days and he might not fucking break into a sweat type of thing. Well, I hate that personally because I like to run around and stuff like that. But when Stan wanted to train or Stan wanted to play, Stan was unplayable. Left foot, right foot, quick, strong. He had everything, but it was when Stan wanted to do it type of thing. And you just think, oh, to have that talent to be able to do that, switch it on and off. He could switch it on and off. And if he didn't fancy it, he didn't fancy it.
Did many of them characters clash? You see any scraps on the training pitch?
I think you get scraps wherever you go, don't you?
Yeah.
I remember having a scrap at Bolton with my brother-in-law, Dave Lee. Remember little Dizzy?
Yeah.
Dizzy was my brother-in-law. Back then he was. He's divorced and I'm divorced now, like, but we still keep in touch. But me and him had a scrap, probably unfair, like, because I'm 6 foot and he's 5 foot one.
Like, you know,
he's about your height. So I think you get scraps everywhere, don't you? You know, fucking hell.
Did you take the win?
I jumped on his back from behind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, one of them, you know what I mean?
So you went into the next week undefeated, didn't you?
He wanted a rematch, but I wasn't having it. It was toe to toe.
Undefeated. One from one.
I'll have to put that on my medical form for the fight. Says, have you had any previous fights? I'll have to hoi that one in. You
know? So when you moved on from Villa, obviously, Celtic, was there interest in England?
Yeah, there was one or two. But I think when Celtic come in, I knew a couple of lads who were at Celtic at the time, good mates, and Martin O'Neill was the manager, just gone in. He'd already signed Chris Sutton from Chelsea. I spoke to Martin before I went to Villa when he was Leicester manager. So he tried to take us to Leicester. So when he tried to take us to Celtic, it was a no-brainer for me to go up there and sample that, yeah.
That's fair play to him, because some managers have thought, I tried signing him and he's gone somewhere else, fuck him.
Yeah, yeah.
Some stubborn bastards.
It just shows you the type of bloke he is, though. He was brilliant. And I think he was pretty pissed off when I didn't go to Leicester. Then when he got the job at Celtic and I seen what he was doing, then speaking to him and told us what his plans were, and then I thought, wouldn't mind being a part of that. And it was
best decision
I ever made, you know. Yeah.
Him coming back in for you thinking, do you know what, he must really like me.
I think it was probably him and his assistant, John Robertson, who's his number two when he was at Leicester and Celtic and wherever, Villa after that. And Robbo went everywhere with him. I think Robbo quite fancied us as well. So he probably pushed it and said, this kid's struggling at Villa, let's have a go back at him. And it did, thankfully. And it worked out great for me.
Did he let Robertson take all the training and stuff?
No, Robbo didn't do any training, though. I'll be brutally honest with you. He'd do crosswords and play pool and have a bit of banter. That was it. But I think
there's a place for them type of coaches, aren't there?
He was like Martin's sounding board. He had a good eye for a player. He was the link man between the manager and the dressing room. He was always in and out. You know, if we wanted anything to get back to the gaffer, we'd tell Robbo. We knew it would get back. He wasn't grassing. We'd feed him things like, we're not happy with the shape we're playing. I think we should go 4-3-3 and all that. So he's actually done me forward for me book, Martin O'Neill. And I'd not give him too much away, but he actually says in the foreword to my book, I actually listen to Tomo more than I fucking let on. So, Robbo was like the link man between the manager and the players. And Steve Walford done most of the coaching. Martin wouldn't particularly get involved in the coaching either. It was Steve Walford who'd done the majority of it, yeah.
I'd be blaming somebody else, though. I'd be like, Stubbsy says we should play 4-3-3. Don't shoot the messenger, but Stubbsy's not happy.
No, but I think he quite liked the fact that there'd be a group of us sit with Robbo, because we'd sit together quite often. Myself, Sutty, Lenny, Jackie McNamara, Big John, John Artson, would all be sitting either having a game of cards or just having a coffee the night before a game in a hotel, and would just drop things in that would need
grenades.
And you guarantee it would get back.
It'd be a touch if we got a couple of days off him.
All that kind of stuff got dropped. I mean, he was one of those, Martin. I think the old school bit like Cluffy, that he was, if you needed a day off, he'd give you 3 days off, like, you know. And when he lost it, he'd give it the old, but you what? Properly. He knew he was angry when he'd done that. Come on,
what the fuck? Stop trying to thread the fucking eye of a needle. Just fucking pass it wide.
You knew when he'd done that with his hand, he was fucking raging. So,
is he scratching? Is he?
No,
he just, nose
it, was just, it was just a thing he used to do. He put his hand there and he goes, Tomo. Or Lenny. It was normally Lenny or Tomo that got it, like, you know. So, but he was brilliant. He didn't lose his rag very often, but when he did, you knew you were in an argument.
Did you, when you got to Celtic, was it bigger than you thought?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I knew all about them. a lot of my family are Catholics, and I'd been to testimonials down in England that they played in. So I'd seen the fans travelling just for a testimonial game, and I knew it was big. Stubbsy was already there, who I'd played with at Bolton. Tommy Johnson was already there, who I knew from the North East. So I used to get this, John McGinley used to harp on about it. He was a big Celtic fan. Andy Walker was at Bolton, always harped on it. But Owen Coyle was a Celtic fan. So I got all this Celtic stuff from all these lads who knew all about it. So it was just, you didn't realise until you got in the door. And then it was phenomenal. The media attention, not just on Celtic Rangers. It's just like, no disrespect to the other clubs, but what are they right about, Celtic and Rangers? So you were under the microscope all the time. Massive, massive club. And then when you start travelling the world pre-season, whether it's Australia, New York, America, anywhere, Far East, Celtic fans everywhere. Just phenomenal. I mean, I can walk down the street, whether it's here in Manchester, Newcastle, Bolton. I very rarely get recognised if I'm out and about anywhere. If I go to Glasgow, it's a different kettle of fish. Or if I'm on holiday, you won't get a Bolton fan or a Newcastle or a Villa fan saying, oh, he used to play for Newcastle. It's always a Celtic fan who'll recognise you because they're just everywhere. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Really.
So if we're having a night out in Glasgow, I need to be stood next to you then,
not for the knockdowns. I'll get you in anywhere you want. Partly, just give us a text, no bother. but it is. It's a different level. It really is,
Could you go out in the city?
Yeah, you'd go out. You'd have to be careful where you went out. Yeah. But I wasn't one of those go out after an Old Firm game, go out because you've won. I'd go out if we'd lost as well, because I think if you're prepared to go out when you've won, you've got to be prepared to go out when you've lost as well. I wasn't one of those who hid away, because you've got to get that happy medium, because if people see you out celebrating because you won an Old Firm game, they're going to go, aye, where was he when they got beat the last one or whatever? So I tend to keep a happy medium and just go out regardless, you know.
Win or lose.
Unless it was a red card, then I'd fucking hide.
It's one of them. When you sign, it could go either way. You know, if you start struggling, obviously massive club, big expectations, but you won the treble in the first year. Yeah. That must have took the edge off for you.
Your first season was a good season. I mean, I think they lost the league the season before Martin come in by 15 points, which is a massive difference in a title race. And then Martin come in and they won it by 18 points. So that's a massive turnaround, losing by 15 to winning it by 18. So it was a great first season. And obviously he'd signed Chris Sutton. Then he signed myself, Didier Gatt, Lenny comes in, John Artson comes in. So for Celtic, you know, big money signings. Chris was 6 million. Lenny was 5.5 million. John was 5 million. So there was, you know, bringing big players in from the Premiership who were tried and tested at that level, you know. So it was a good time.
Did you find it easier?
No, it was really tough. As hard as that says, because the standard isn't what we were used to week in the Premiership. But although the standard wasn't good, the intensity was ridiculous because they're playing against Celtic. Whether it's at Celtic Park, they'd sit in 10 behind the ball, got to break them down. It's tough to do, no matter who you're playing against. And then when you're playing away games, whether it was Motherwell, Dundee United, Inverness, Aberdeen, just the intensity of the games, it's their cup final.
Yeah.
They might not have had the quality players that we had, the Larsons, the Suttons, the Petrovs, the Lamberts and stuff like that, but you knew you were going to be in for a tough game. You just didn't get any easy games. Yeah. So it was, the intensity was ridiculous. Mm. Yeah.
How was Lambert as a player?
Good player. At least you don't win the Champions League with Dortmund playing in the team that he played in if you're average. Just a bit boring at times, you know, like talking about Germany all the time. Adidas boots and BMWs and Mercedes and all that, you know what I mean? he was a good skipper, Lambo, and he was a great pro and good for young lads to look at and see how he goes about his day-to-day business, you know. Thought he was the main man on the pool table, but he wasn't. I was. Him and Henrik used to give it the big one, but I was the main man at pool.
Shows the effect O'Neill had on his players, because I think I've said before, he was my manager at Blackburn and he used to do so many things that O'Neill used to do. Mm-hmm. It was just a carbon copy.
Yeah.
Even to the point with his collar up and that.
We used to have a bit of banter with him.
Did he do that?
He didn't do that one.
He don't speak Irish.
Yeah. He did. He used to with his collars and stuff like that, and tuck his bottoms into his socks and all
that's
that.
All come from Clough.
Yeah.
I probably knock on.
Yeah. Name 18, to walk in the changing room. Nobody knew if they were playing. He would just name 18 names as fast as he could and then walk out. And we were like, are we on the bench? Am I playing?
Did he never do any shape or anything like that, Lambo?
He did. He did a bit. He was pretty hands-on.
Yeah.
But you could just see that there was a lot of O'Neill in him.
Aye.
Tell us about the old firm, them games.
Oh, it starts the week before from when the game before finishes. So you finish on Saturday, let's say, for instance, we're playing Rangers the following Saturday morning or Sunday morning. It was just the build-up of the week. The level went up in training. The media interest was just there until you pull up outside the ground, whether it was at Ibrox or Celtic Park. The crowds were there and it was just ridiculous. The nerves were gone, the adrenaline's gone. It just sucks you in. I think I played in 26. Did get 3 red cards at Ibrox, so I probably did get sucked in on a couple. I'm not saying there were 3 red cards. Vicious headbutt. but just the intensity, it was unbelievable. The games were quality, and I mean, the Rangers team back then was full of good players as well. You know, Michael Molls, Ronald De Boer, Barry Ferguson, Toran Riflo, you know, just quality players, you know. So it was. There were great occasions if you won. If you lost, it was just not good.
Imagine like the foreign lads coming in, just not knowing like what the fuck's this all about. You know, at least you know a little bit about it. Yeah. It's a big game, innit? Yeah. But imagine a foreigner coming in for the first time and experiencing that.
Aye, it's phenomenal. If anyone, I mean, I was lucky enough to be one of the few who played in them. But even like people who are fans of football, if you get a chance to go to one, whether it's at Celtic Park or whether it's at Ibrox. Got to take up the opportunity, because I don't know if it's lost a bit at the minute because they're not allowing opposition fans in.
Yeah.
I think they chopped it to something like 500 or 750, and then they've even chopped it down to none now. I think the last one at Ibrox, they didn't let any Celtic fans in. So I wouldn't really fancy going to Ibrox just with 50-odd thousand Rangers fans there. I think it defeats the object of a derby. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've played in derbies yourselves, and derbies are about having two sets of opposition fans. I know the intensity of an Old Firm game is a different ballpark to most derbies, but just you want the banter in the ground, don't you?
Yeah.
And for it to be just 50-odd thousand at Ibrox or 60,000 at Celtic Park or just Celtic fans, you know. And Rangers fans come to Celtic Park once, and I'm taking a corner next to the Rangers fans there. Two tiers, Celtic Park. Fucking spuds coming from the top level, as I'm going to take, and I'm talking about jacket spuds. Honestly, because they're taking the piss out the Irish potato famine back hundreds of years ago, so they're throwing potatoes. And if one of them hits me on the lid, even though I've got a massive coupon, I'm out the game. Even if one hits Party on the head, it's game over. You know, honestly, I'm not joking. I ran past the 18-yard box because the potatoes were just raining down on us. I'm just lucky I didn't want it, because if one hit, I was in trouble. Probably like one of Simon Webb's left hooks.
Imagine patting down. What's that in your pocket? Oh, it's just a tatty. I bet it's the fucking £2 of Jersey Royals.
Oh, unbelievable.
Do you live next door to Rickson? Is that right?
It was like one of these estates, you know, like these new estates, they're not up new builds. There was loads of people on there. Kenny Dalglish had one on there at the time. I was on there. I'd just signed. Chris Sutton was on there. Tommy Johnson was on there. Johan Mialbi was on there. Morten Wieghorst was on there. So they were just the Celtic lads. And then you had like Tommy Johnson was on there. And then you had the Rangers lads. You had Tor André Flo, Ronald de Boer, Rickson, Craig Moore, Dick Advocaat, the Rangers manager at the time. So on this big estate, I mean, it was hundreds of houses, like, but on this estate, fucking, there must have been 20 connections with the old firm. So it was, it got interesting at times.
So when I saw shouting through letterboxes, is that?
Yeah, right? Rickson. He come with fireworks and he's Bull Mastiff and all that. So we'll not go too much into that. There's a piece on that in the book.
Well, did this have a little local pub then, this estate?
No, it would have been a taxi ride away.
I'm just thinking, is it like a Celtic players' corner and a Rangers players' corner in a local pub?
But in the area we lived, there was obviously places you'd go, restaurants and stuff like that. And most of the time you'd end up saying hello to them. Like, you know, I socialised a little bit with Ronald de Boer because he lived right opposite us. And he was funny, Ronald. He was just, you know, we'd go training a bit like this, wouldn't you? Every now and again, you just go casual, don't you? And a trackie. Not Ronald. He was like immaculate every day, Gucci, Prada. See him going to training, I'm thinking, where's he going on a night out? Or what? No, just going training, just. But no, we'd more often than not, it was all right with most of them. But then Fernando coming around with a Bull Mastiff and all that, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have minded having to roll around on the garden with him, but I'm not rolling around with that dog, man. There's plenty on Fernando in the book, God rest him. I know he's passed away now, but he was a terrific player, but he was a character.
One of these bullet points here that just says Sutton, pubes in wallet.
Oh, should I tell the story? That was funny because Sutty lived about four or five doors up from me, and my ex-wife and Sutty's wife, Sam, they were really pally. You know what wags are like? They don't like doing much graft, do they? They want cleaners, they want ironing ladies and stuff. So there was a lad, Bruce, used to come and pick the ironing up and take all the ironing away. Take it to the girls who used to iron it, and then he'd bring it back all hanged and pressed and stuff like that, folded. And I said to Bruce one day, he was picking the ironing up, and I knew he was picking Sutty's up after. I went, Bruce, get the girls who are doing the ironing to put creases in Sutty's jeans. Sutty was off a paraffin lamp, to be fair. He just had one pair of trainers for jeans, one pair for like a tracksuit on a match day, and one pair for a Prada Sports or whatever, and he'd just wear it with a suit until then, walking the dogs. And then when them were wrecked, he'd buy another pair, but he'd just wear the same pair all the time, so he's off a tramp. But I said to Bruce, I went, just iron creases in his jeans. And I forgot all about it. And then one day, a couple of days later, he comes into training, walks in the dressing room. We used to get changed at Celtic Park, take our cars up to the training ground. And he comes in there, he's got his Prada Sport trainers on, and he's got his jeans, and his jeans have got creases pressed in the front of them. Well, we start ripping shit out of him, taking the piss and all that. And it wasn't just me, like the lads, but he knew it was me who'd stitched them up. So didn't think anything of it, like. And then after training, there'd be me, Sutty, a few of the lads who lived up in the estate where we used to live, Tommy, if he was still there, Johan, and we'd go and have a bowl of pasta in this place called Andiamo, up in towards Newton Mens. And on the way back to Andiamo, I need petrol in my car. So I think, so I'll nip in the garage, past the garage on the way to the restaurant. I think, I'll stop and get some petrol. So I fills the motor up, and then I goes to the counter to pay, like, and I get my wallet out, and there's a woman in front of us, she pays, and then it's me next. There's a woman stood behind us, quite fit. She had her wappers out and all that. You know, I've already clocked her when she was filling her car up with petrol. I think, not bad. And anyway, she stood behind us, and I opened my wallet on the counter. So there's the counter. And I opened my wallet like that to get my card out, and there was just a bundle of pubic hair in my wallet, right? And it just fell onto the counter in the petrol station. It fell onto the counter. The girl behind the desk's like, she clocks what it is straight away. The woman behind us is like, seeing what I've, like, honestly, like, she's seeing it. And I'm... brushing onto the floor, trying to get his credit card in the machine. And I knew Big Sonny just shaved these bollocks and took it in my hair, put it in my wallet and put it in my jeans. So yeah, that was because I stitched them up with the creases in his jeans. So it was that kind of dressing room, like you couldn't get away with anything, but that was embarrassing.
It's worked perfectly for him, hasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's worked the killer.
Not any better.
I think he must have thought I'd have got my wallet out when we'll go to pay in the restaurant. But he's done his even more better. Of a kipper. Even if he'd done better. Us in the restaurant in front of the lads, then that would have been funny. But the fact he got us on my own in front of people in a petrol station, absolutely done as a kipper.
They're a different era, aren't they? You can tell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sean Curley.
I mean, well, there's some chewing gum underneath the till you've just brushed into the chewing gum.
I mean, if it was my own, it would have been bad enough. The fact that it was his, you know, it was just nightmare.
Fair play. Did you fuck him out of the ironing again?
Oh, no, never. That was it. But, I did tell it. I'd done a podcast with Simon Ferry. Do you know Simon Ferry? Is it Open Goal? I think I'm not sure. I've done it. And anyways, and he asked us about that story, Simon, and I told him. Anyway, so he rang us up. He went, Tom, what are you doing saying that? I mean, it's only a bit of banter, so he went, yeah, but I do a bit for BT and BBC. And so he seen his arse a little bit with us, but it was all light-hearted banter. You know, hopefully it didn't affect him in any way, shape or form.
We're doing it up again now.
No, I'd done something with him before COVID up in Scotland, and he turned around to us and he went, by the way, you can tell that story tonight if you want, as you've already fucking told it to everyone. So,
I think she'd probably still tell us that story now. Your name will pop when she go, I was behind him in a petrol station and he had pubes in his wallet. Randomly.
They weren't even, mine are red.
How good was Emmerich? Must have been one of the best.
Phenomenal. He was just a natural athlete as well. Like, I remember him, just before I got there, he just got fit from a compound fracture, leg fracture that he'd done away in Bordeaux the season before. But when I was there, he got a bad cheek injury where it needed pinned and plated. So he missed, you know, 6-8 weeks. He comes back in training and it's like he's, you know, if I get injured, I get like more than a month with a hamstring or something. It takes me 2-3 games to get up to a level of fitness or get a bit of match sharpness. Henrik was just first day back straight in training. Back. No fear about heading the ball, no fear about putting his head in.
Yeah.
Just lean, fit. But then apart from that, his movement, ridiculous. His finishing. His leap, just me as a wide man, my job was easy because he'd make fucking shit crosses look good crosses, do you know what I mean? Whereas John Artson, you literally had to put it on the money. You had to, like, he was in a dustbin lid and he wasn't moving out with that dustbin lid, do you know what I mean? So you had to be pinpoint.
Yeah.
Whereas with Henrik, you'd had like a 10-yard fucking margin.
Yeah.
Put it anywhere in that margin and Henrik's getting on the end of it. So he was phenomenal.
Good lad as well.
Great lad. I loved his golf, loved the beer. Just a real good lad. Miserable fucker at times if it wasn't going his way. Didn't really like people having a pop with him. I remember one day Martin had a pop with him at Dundee United and told him to hold the ball up.
Henrik, hold the fucking ball up.
You know, that one of them ones, like, you know. But Henrik didn't like that. But he was just some of the...
He gets you that one, doesn't he?
Some of the times he bailed us out when we played shit and he'd just do something and you think he's won with the game, basically. And it happened regular where he'd bail you out, yeah. Phenomenal. And I think if you ask any of the lads who played with him at Celtic, or even I don't know any of the lads who he played with at United or Barcelona type of thing, I think they'd say the same about him. I think he was getting on money when he went to United and Barcelona, won the Champions League at Barcelona. And I think he was only at United a short time, but the punters loved him. You know, talking about work ethic and all that, he worked his bollocks off for the team. Even though he was gifted and talented, he was proper team player.
Did he have to do a bit of Arts' running then as well for him?
All 10 of us had to do a bit of Arts' running. That's including the goalkeeper. The goalies often had fucking better match running, like stats for running in the match than Arts. Our goalie would do more sprints than fucking Big John. But,
Did it improve your delivery playing with Arts? The fact that it had to be pinpoint?
You just knew. It had to be on the money for the big fella. And
But you had Sutton as well, though, didn't you? So a lot of time they played up front together, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, at times if when Henrik fit, Henrik played. But then there was times when Big John was in form, Martin would find a place in the team for John and Henrik, and Sutton would drop in one bit deeper.
Yeah.
So, you know, the three of them were quality in their own ways. You knew what Henrik was, you knew what Chris was, and you knew what John was. Probably the three best strikers Celtic's had in the history at the club in one time. They've had great strikers over the years, but at any one given time to have them three, people thought Big John was just a lump, but technically, you know, he's touching, he's finishing, and he's striking of the ball, his aerial ability. John was quality. Even, you know, 24 Mars bars, like the day before the game and stuff like that. He needed it.
7 years at Celtic, and you were the first Celtic player to get an England cap. Am I right in saying that? Did you ever think that it, because we were short of left-sided players at the time, did you ever think it hampered you a little bit? Were your chances playing for England?
I think it's the stereotype of Scottish football. Yeah. I think, you know, they think you're playing week in, week out against teams that aren't as good as what you'd be tested in the Premier League. But if you look at the Old Firm games, how intense and the quality of them, and then we were playing in Europe, whether it was Champions League or whether it was UEFA Cup runs, we were playing against quality teams. You know, you mentioned some of the teams in Europe. We played against Barcelona, Villarreal, Liverpool, Blackburn, Bayern Munich, Stuttgart at the time under Felix Magath, Juventus, AC Milan. We were playing big games. But I just think it was overlooked that year, week in, week out, you were playing in Scotland. And
did it frustrate you?
I didn't bother about it. I knew I was playing well. I knew I was playing in big games. I just thought I did get a cap. I did get called up once, but I thought it was a bit of a token gesture, if I'm honest, from Ericsson at the time. I just thought he wanted the press off his back because the press were making noises for us to get given a chance. And I just thought, he thought, do you know what? Just give him a cap. And then that's it, done. And I thought that was how it worked.
You got your cap, though. Nobody can take that from you.
I got my cap. I think he played Jamie Carragher, left back behind us, and no disrespect to Jamie Carragher. He's a right-footed centre-half, in my opinion. Would have been better for me if we'd had a left-back who was left-footed, who was a left-back. I'm not making that as an excuse, but it wasn't ideal having the... I know he could play full-back, Jamie Carragher, but for me, he was a centre-half, and would have been... I'd have preferred if he had... Maybe Ashley Cole or whoever was around at the time. I'd have loved him bombing past us to link up with. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Although I loved getting, obviously pulling the jersey on and playing for England, it was just that cap I thought was just a bit of a token gesture. Like,
you mentioned Barca. Did Big Bobo have a tear up?
I had a tear up in a tunnel at Celtic Park with Big Motta, the centre half for. So he got they sent Rab Douglas off. They got mixed up. Bobo got involved, and I think the ref come in half time and said, can we have the two captains from Barcelona? And Jackie McNamara was our captain. Jackie kind of goes in the ref's office, and referee says, right, number six is off and your number one's off. What? Wasn't even number one. He was splitting up. It was Bobo who was getting involved with Mott, that type of thing. So Jackie Mack walks back in the dressing room and he goes, right, Big Rab, you're off. And then Martin does his thing.
You fucking Mott.
It was one of them. Bars like rap. And so we had to take someone off and put Magnus Hedman on, I think, at the time. So aye, Big Bobo caused the tear up in the tunnel. Aye, but
big fucker as well, wasn't he?
Aye. So I think that was obviously 10v10, and then Saviola twatted me just after half time. So then he got sent off straight red. Done him a kip, to be fair. He swung out of it, isn't that? Jumped up as though he kicked as bad, it didn't hurt. Then he got a straight red, so it was 10v9. Then it was like a game of basketball then. Imagine that, 10v9. You got Xavi and Ronaldinho and all that, and Eto'o. Holy shit. That's when you want it 11v11, because you need to keep the spaces small. But that was a proper Barcelona team.
What? Did you get a result?
We won 1-0, yeah. Do you not know that I scored?
I thought
you might have that on your sheet. We won 1-0.
I've got pubes in wallet, but I haven't got your goal against Barcelona.
You've not got the winner against Barcelona. That's my claim to fame, that one.
So is the, you know, obviously the Old Firm atmosphere, is that different to the European Cup night, Tuesday night, lights, Wednesday night, whatever it is? Are they different atmospheres?
The Old Firm games, you sensed... you sense the friction, the tension, the hatred between the fans and the players got involved in that. And, you know, people say to you when you're playing in big games as a player, they'll say, oh, it'll settle down. You know, see it through the first 15, 20 minutes, see it through, then it'll settle down. More often than not, an Old Firm game would be scrappy. You know, it would take a mistake or a worldie or something like that for it to be decided. But the European games, the atmosphere was different in the stadium. It was an excitement. It was a buzz. Whereas the Old Firm games, there was a proper tension about it. And then obviously the European games, you played against some of the best players in the world, and then games, some of the players you played against. So, but there was definitely a difference between the atmosphere between Old Firm and Europe. Yeah,
I mean, you said you did get sucked in, but did you? You know, the three red cards in Old Firm, was it just one of them things?
I think looking back on it, I probably did. And then when I went into the management coaching side of it, when Lenny was the manager and he took us in as first team coach, that would be my advice to the lads before the games. You know, don't get sucked in. You know, we ain't going to win an Old Firm game or many games with 10 men on the pitch. So that was my advice back to them, giving them a bit of learning from my mistakes. Don't do what I'd done, because you're letting people down left, right and centre. Mm. So you can say I did get sucked in, certainly on maybe one occasion. I know I got three red cards, but I mean, the headbutt's never a red card because I don't make contact. He goes down Lovenkrantz like a bag of shit, gets done, you know, straight red, which was for me not. And then another one, probably two yellow cards on Ferguson. You know, two yellow cards, probably lack of discipline. And the other one I'm unsure about, but you can get sucked in without a doubt. And that was the advice I give when I was on the coaching side of it for Old Firm games. Mm-hmm. Just bite your tongue, be careful, stay on your feet, don't get roped in.
I know Fabregas was, he made the headlines for throwing pizza at Ferguson, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did you have a summit with Mourinho? Lucasaid or something?
It was a UEFA Cup final in 2003 in Seville, yeah. We just conceded before half-time. And, we obviously going in at half-time, 1-0 down, disappointed. And he was piping up in the tunnel, Mourinho, like to someone. I don't know if it was officials or whether it was one of our players or someone, one of our staff. And anyways, it was a bit of a hoo-ha. It was a roasting hot night. I'm not sure the temperature, but it was warm, so got a drinks bottle, trying to get some fluids in before I go in the dressing room. You know, you're talking earlier about starting fights off and then doing one. That was when the hand grenade pin come out. I just got Mourinho like 6 feet away and just straight in his coupon.
The thing is, it comes out at pace as well.
Tight thing. Oh yeah, come on, when you properly go like that, it's coming out like one of them kids' water guns. Like that. And anyways, it gets him like, and then it obviously it kicks off properly then. So it's just a complete fracas, and I just do what I'm going to say. I'm sat in the dressing room like that. I'm thinking, where the fuck's everyone? Where's everyone? Then everyone comes in the dressing room. You fucking started that, you, and you done what I'm not. I just got in the dressing room, get some fluids in. But yeah, I've never bumped into Mourinho since. He'd probably want to give us one, but I did a damn killer.
The shock of it, yeah. You're in the fear, you'd be fuming.
Aye, but like you say, them, they do come out quick.
Flyers.
They do.
Mental, it'll be sticky afterwards, yeah. Now, won't it?
You can wipe it as much as you want, but you'll still have that you
know,
when
stickiness. Yeah.
It's a good one, that.
It's a good one. Had you moved on when Tommy Gravesen came in?
No, I was there.
Yeah?
Play Tommy at pool.
No?
When Thomas come in, I was at the stage where I'd been like frozen out. No, when the manager says, get over there and train with the kids. I was at that stage, so I wasn't really around the first team much then. So it was when Strachan come in after Martin and Neil had left, and I was kind of getting pushed out the door. So I wasn't really, although I'd obviously spoke to Thomas a few times because he's got a couple of pals who I know and stuff, so got on well with him, but he was a bit wild, wasn't he? Mm. A bit wild.
Did you have your own pool cue, by the way? Were you that good?
Aye. Well, it was my dad's. I used to nick them out with my dad's locker in the snooker club. Yeah, but I had my own eye. Yeah. I was decent. I'm not just saying it. I can't believe it.
I believe it.
Like, if Lambo's watching this, Lambo will be saying, nah, you weren't the best, but I was. So.
So were you saying, was that the first time in your career where you've had that then? Where you've been frozen out? Were you?
Villa as well. Towards the end at Villa, I was kind of, you know when you're getting pushed out, don't you? You know when your time's up, So,
and how did you take that? How are you?
I was fine. I was great with it. Listen, I'd had what, 5 or 6 seasons already at Celtic, and most of them, 4 or 5 of them, were good ones. And I knew I was coming to the end. Henrik had already gone. Sutty had gone. So it was kind of Martin O'Neill's team coming, fizzling out, and Gordon wanting to bring in his own blood, which managers do that. I was 33. I was on a very good contract, and I just think that I had young lads coming through at the time, Sean Maloney, Aidan McGeady, and I just think they wanted one me out the door, whether it was a wage bill or whether it was just get young kids through. So,
did you do it in a good way?
I moved on.
Did he speak to you about it, or was it that bit underhanded?
Gordon was all right with us. I'm not so sure who the chief executive was, but as I say, I go into detail in the book about it. It's not nice. It's not nice the way it ended. But it's one of those you've got to take on your chin. And I just wanted to get out and go and play, and I did. I went to Leeds. So,
did that tie your time at Celtic a bit? Or?
Not for me, it didn't. I think a lot of people probably thought, why did it happen like that? Why didn't you maybe get the send off you deserved and stuff like that? Because I'd been a good servant and enjoyed my time there and won lots of things. But as I said earlier, I go into it in a lot more detail in the book about the ins and outs and my opinions and how it was. Listen, it breaks you to leave a club that you've had such a good affiliation with. And even now, I do a lot of functions now when I bump into fans, and they're brilliant with us, and they ask us questions, why this, why that, by the book. I loved it, but it was hard at the end. And it was a pre-season, we were away in America, and he could tell I wasn't happy, Gordon Strachan. To be fair to him, he just said, look, I can see you're going through the motions type of thing. You know, you don't really want to be here. He said, listen, we'll get you a flight home if you want. And I said, yeah, listen, we'd already played someone in Washington or somewhere like that the night before. I think he put us on for 4 minutes at the end, and it was kind of like, you know, deserve a bit better than that. Do you know what I mean? Putting us on for 4 minutes of a pre-season game. So whether or not he was trying to piss us off or what, I don't know. But the next day I flew back. Yeah.
How did the move to Leeds come about?
The chief scout at Leeds was a lad called Gwyn Williams. And he was like Ken Bates' right-hand man, if you want, Gwyn. But I was at Chelsea when I was 13. Went down to Chelsea a couple of times on trial as a young Geordie lad. So Gwyn was the head of youth development at Chelsea. So he'd always kept an eye on my career, going on through wherever I was, Newcastle, Bolton, Villa, Celtic. And then when I become available from Celtic, he'd obviously said to Dennis Wise, who was the manager, had the lad when he was at Chelsea as a kid, like, you know, he's this, that and the other. And
surely Wise knew about you as well, though. You
know, aye, Dennis, I think he probably did, but I played against the little rat a few times. Dennis Wise and his wobbly eyes. He was great with me, Dennis, but that was his song, wasn't it, on Radio 1 with Chris Moyles. He'd be driving into training, the Chris Moyles radio show. Dennis Wise has wobbly eyes. He looks like Nookie Bear. He's one of them things. Ripping the piss out of Leeds. He was a Leeds fan as well, Chris Moyles. One of them was ripping the piss out of the manager. I think it was a Chelsea connection. So Dennis got in touch and Gwyn got in touch and said, did I fancy it? Obviously, Leeds at the time, Blakey was there, obviously, Gary Kelly was there. It wasn't a great period in the club's history, but for me, it was just a chance to get out and play.
How was Wise as manager?
He was good. He was thorough. He was right into his tactics. I mean, a lot of people said behind the scenes, oh, it's Gus Poyet does this, Gus Poyet does that. No, Dennis was clued in himself, right into his set players, probably going back to his Wimbledon days, phone against set players. I've never seen anything like it in terms of how meticulous he was. We'd get like a little catalogue of A4 paper on a Friday, take it home on a Friday night. We'd have to study it. Then before the game, like 10 minutes before kickoff when he's doing his whatever last words, you'd have to hand them in. So he'd take them off everyone. I used to try and hide them next to me towel and that with the pages open, you know, because he'd ask questions. Where should you be? He'd test you. So he'd ask 3 people, but he might not say, Tomo, who's the 5 in the wall?
You don't know it's coming.
So he might just say, Tomo, who's the two-man wall on the right-hand side? So I had to know what other people's jobs were. And if you didn't get the question right, that's why I tried to hide it. Like,
you're like writing answers on your hand.
It was like trying to hide it, but he'd count them in to make sure he got everybody's. And if you didn't get it right, it was a oner straight in the kitty. Yeah, it was 100 quid straight in. So he used to test you. It was good. Because you didn't have to just learn your jobs. You had to try and... I mean, some people were thick as shit. They couldn't even learn their own jobs. When he asked them a question, they just go, there's me wanna.
Come from the wall and go, straight to your wallet.
there's me door. He was good, Dennis. He was very, very thorough.
You always know you wanted to get into coaching after.
I couldn't have done much else. You know, got a GCSE in pottery. What was I going to do with that? Do you know what I mean? So... I started doing my badges when I was playing, when I was at Celtic. So I'm probably about 30, 31 when I started doing my badges, and then just went on to do them all, and then gradually started at Newcastle doing the youth team, and then worked up from there.
So I bet you jumped at the chance to go back to Celtic then, considering you didn't feel like you had the send-off that you deserved.
Oh, once Lenny rang us and said, he was caretaker manager initially, and then when he said, if I get the job, I'd like you to come in type of thing, it was a no-brainer, even though I was doing the reserves at Newcastle at the time. It was kind of like, nice to go back and be a part of that massive club again.
Mm-hmm. You'd obviously played with Lenny, and then you're working under him. What are you, a different person, player to manager?
No, he was much the same. I think what you see is what you get. I think he was much like that as a player, Lenny. The way you see him on the pitch was how he was off the pitch as a player. And I think the way he was on the touchline as a manager was the way he was away from the touchline type of thing. So he was much the same as what you see is what you get, yeah.
Did you set out wanting to be a manager eventually?
Initially I did. Obviously thought, cut your teeth, do the coaching stuff. It's something I'd like to get back into. If something come up, I'd love to do it again. It's a bit of freedom. I love being on the grass, coaching young lads, developing players, whether it's first team level, which it was at times at Newcastle and certainly for a couple of years at Celtic. But yeah, I love it. I think it's great. It's a tough gig. You know, as a player, you've got a contract, so most of the time you're going to be there the length of your contract, if not sign a new contract. As a manager or a coach, you don't know where you are and when and how long. So that's the tough side of it. So maybe getting something secure with a youth team, 18s, 19s, something like that might be more. But I love coaching, yeah.
You were at Bury for a while, weren't you? And was that why it was all... Was it Stuart Day?
Stuart. Yeah. I was all kicking off. It was...
That must have been a nightmare.
It was a nightmare for the players. The players weren't getting paid on time. The fans were frustrated.
That's with Clarkie, isn't it?
Aye. Yeah, Lee took us in, and it's just a nightmare for a club with that tradition. The fans, you know, all right, they're not a massive club, they don't get massive crowds, but for that 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people, it's their lives, like, you know what I mean? For them to go down the pan, it's just tragic.
They're on the way back, though, aren't they?
Aye, they're set up, aren't they? Yeah, so fingers crossed they can make a go of it, aye.
When you were playing with Gareth Southgate, I bet you couldn't see where he is now.
No, although he was a great talker, he was always saying the right things, whether it was on the pitch or in the dressing room before the game or half time or after the game. He was good at putting his point across. But
could you ever see him as best mates with Woody?
No, I would never put Gareth and Woody as mates. But obviously at Palace, they were at Palace together, so that's where Woody become friendly with Gareth and Alan Pardew. I think they were quite tight, the three of them. So just before I left Villa, I was at Gareth's 30th birthday party in Sutton Coldfield, place called, was it Four Oaks? Lovely, lovely place. I couldn't afford to live on there, but Gareth could and one or two others, Doug Ellis, the chairman and that. But Gareth had a lovely big house, so it was his 30th. And I wasn't drinking. I'd had the heads up about going up to Glasgow possibly the next day. So I was thinking I better keep myself right, might need to drive to Glasgow. So great party. Gareth put a great function on and great caterers were in, and he had a rock band on. And Woody's obviously there. Obviously nothing to do with Aston Villa, just as one of Gareth's best mates. And I think one of the rock band, I'd left fairly early, left my ex-wife there at the time to carry on partying. And then the next day I get to the story, Woody sparked the lead singer from the rock band. Gives him an absolute banjo. Police call and everything, and Big Woody sparked him. I think the rocks, the lead singer of the rock band, had tried to hit on Woody's missus, and Woody's just gone over and banged him. Like, so,
no one caught tonight, boys.
I can imagine, like,
he probably didn't admit that when you had him on, did he? Woody? Didn't tell you that.
I can imagine Gareth sat at the end of his bed after the party.
I know.
We weren't supposed to end like this.
Yeah.
We weren't supposed to have the busies over it.
Blue lights outside now. I think it ended the party. I think the band packed up and said, that's us done, like, because of the lead singer was out of it.
Quality.
What a guy. Yeah.
Nice one, mate.
Yeah, good luck, mate, for coming on. We'll up with the fight and with the book.
I know. Might carry on the boxing after, but not in the ring, just on the pads, so I don't get it back. Yeah.
Who would you least like to get in the ring with, like, with all the hard men?
It's from Steps.
Who you play with, because we spoke to him, Bobo, Jerry.
Big
Jerry
John. Target. John Orton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the big man in action. He's Andy the big fella, without a doubt. Imagine Porty wouldn't be three bad, like.
My lover, me, not a fighter.
I don't think you'd be a jabber. I just think you'd be one of them who just walks onto it.
Wrestler,
just wants to get us in the corner.
Yeah. If I've not knocked you out within a minute, though, you've a fucking great chance. I'll have fatigue.
It's a long time, a minute, by the way. You'd do well if you'd done a minute, by the way. I'm telling you now. I'm looking at the clock after 30 seconds with a gum shield in, and I'm thinking 2 minutes is a long time.
So, what are you thinking for your walk on? Music?
Possibly a blues song. Fog on the Tyne. I don't know, really. A bit of Jerry Cinnamon. I don't know. People are saying you've got to be like, get the crowd involved in that, but I don't give a shit about the crowd. It's like something's got to get me in the zone, hasn't it? So I'll probably not even notice the crowd. I'm fucking nearly vomiting now thinking about it. Fucking done as a kit my hand. You know, you've got me thinking, well, am I going to be sick with a gum shield? I'm probably fucking choking me gum shield or something. Not, but being serious, talking about the vomit, and I hadn't even thought about the fight. Guaranteed, I'll be spewing me ring up now.
Just don't have a gap.
Don't have a gap.
I don't know what I'm going to eat before the fight.
Yeah,
I hope I'm first on. They've not even given us the order of the fights.
Just came with Lucas Air bottle just before Bell.
Oh, well, this won't go out till after the fighting anyway, so I could. Yeah.
Cheers, mate.
All the best.
Cheers.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.